una storia, no, oh va, io sono pazzo di te. E che sta fortuna, sì, sei lì, terra nisciuna, un posto ci sarà per essere felici, cantare a squarciagola e dici tutto quello che vuoi tu, un posto ci sarà dove si spera ancora, la gente porterà una storia, no, oh va, io sono pazzo di te. E che sta fortuna, sì, sì, lì, terra nisciuna,
to Arts Express here on CITR 101.9. I'm your host, Katie Fitzpatrick. We have a good show on today. We have a review of both the Roy Arden exhibit and the Georgia O'Keeffe exhibit currently showing at the Vancouver Art Gallery. We also have a little bit of information for you guys about the upcoming European Union Film Festival at the Pacific Cinematheque Theater, and I'm going to have a review of one of the films that's going to be showing there on Friday night. We also have an interview with ballet choreographer Simone Orlando, and we're also going to have your listing so you know what's coming up and a little bit of music for you all. So I'm going to start off today with my review of the Roy Arden exhibit. So just so you guys know, here's a little bit of information first of all about Roy Arden. Over the past two decades, Roy Arden has become one of Canada's most respected artists. In fact, his work is even included in the Museum of Modern Art in Manhattan. His work has contributed significantly to Vancouver's reputation as an important center for contemporary photo-based art. The exhibition at the Vancouver Art Gallery presents a mid-career overview of Arden's multifaceted practice and the diverse strategies used in his art form from the early 1980s to the present. The exhibit includes four major projects or trends in Arden's career. The first is the 1981 to 1985 project Fragments, a collection which attempts to capture pieces of life that are beautiful but overlooked. This is a collection which focuses mostly on the aesthetic aspect of photography. Arden described it as his first mature project, and as one which focused on his pictorial skills and the use of visual poetics. Although this collection appears lovely when one first enters the room, seeing all the different small, dark photographs displayed against the wall, the photos themselves lack the visual and thematic interest to stand on their own, making Fragments a weaker collection. The second project is one in which Arden used old archive photographs of BC and Vancouver's history in order to tell a story. He left the photos intact, but added something new to it, be it numbers, splashes of color, or a simple increase in terms of scale. These projects were very interesting, as the additions helped the viewer to associate new emotions or ideas with the photograph. One difficult example was a photograph called Maquettes for a Mission, an old photograph which showed First Nations people performing a play about Jesus' crucifixion. The face of one woman in the picture was the most powerful aspect, as she seemed to be crying out in silent frustration to the viewer. The example was also problematic, however, because Arden added nothing to the photograph but simply enlarged it. Because of this, one could question whether or not this photograph can be considered an artwork by Roy Arden, since more than anything is an artwork found by Roy Arden. Nonetheless, I would suggest that it doesn't really matter either way. The photograph was fascinating and spoke to the viewer, and thus it served its role as artwork to the utmost, and so I feel grateful to Roy Arden for having found a way to display it. Whether or not he took it is somewhat irrelevant to me personally. The third trend in Arden's work was one which he focused on the landscape of the economy. In these works, he focuses on history and modernity, the contrast of the old with the new. Here he hits Vancouver on the head, with photographs such as Development and Monster House. Although Arden claims his work is more interested in urban life in general than with Vancouver in particular. Although these photographs pose some interesting questions about modernity, I also felt that they lacked visual interest and that they could have been framed with more precision and care. The fourth trend exhibited was collage, where Arden collected and arranged 28,000 images found on the internet in order to suggest, in his words, an idiosyncratic and kaleidoscopic view of the world. Some of these collages were very well done, with the photos arranged in a way that evoked emotions and interest. Arden also included some video work in his exhibit, and I wanted to briefly share his response from an interview about why he uses video. I was curious about what time-based mediums and sound would allow me to express that I couldn't with still images. I wanted to make pictures that breathed, or pulsed a bit. I'm not that interested in making narrative or stories. I prefer short scenes or vignettes. I like to think of the videos as appearances. With video, the duration of the video viewing is controlled by the artist. I'm very wary of video and film because I think art today is in danger of becoming entertainment. Art, under capitalism, is always being drawn towards the entertainment industry. I try to use video as a counter to entertainment, an anti-entertainment. So that's sort of an interesting look at Roy Arden's perspective using video, but not in the typical entertaining way. And one of the videos that he had on was really interesting. It was about a riot in Vancouver, and it was just showing snippets of people sort of acting in these depraved ways, I suppose. And it was definitely interesting, but definitely didn't have a plot, like he's saying. So, sort of mixed feelings about that one, I suppose. Overall, I found the Roy Arden exhibit to be somewhat mediocre. Although I enjoyed the collages and archive photographs, I was unenthused by Arden's own work. As a bit of an amateur photographer myself, I was sometimes disappointed with the quality. I've seen many Emily Carr grad exhibits, and many students seem to mimic Arden's style in Fragments and the Landscape of the Economy collection. Unfortunately for Arden, however, I feel many of these students are able to create photographs which are as impactful as Arden's or more. Once again, the exhibition presents a comprehensive look at Arden's complex and thematic rich body of work from the past quarter century, combining Arden's activities as a photographer and video artist, as a scavenger archivist of existing imagery and a producer of original pictures, as well as an acute observer of local detail as it relates to urban life on a global level. That's till January 20th at the Vancouver Art Gallery. Now, up right now, we have a few listings for you guys, and we're going to tell you what is coming up in theater, as well as in dance and in music, and then we're going to play a little bit of music for you all here on Arts Express. So, in theater, there's Tideline. New World Theater and Touchstone Theater present Wajdi Muad's drama about a bicultural North American man's journey to bury his father in his unnamed native land. That is till November 24th at the Rand House Community Arts and Recreation Center. Danny and the Deep Blue Sea. Make Our Own Productions presents John Patrick Shanley's play about two troubled souls trying to make sense of their lives. That's till December 18th at the Beaumont Studios on West 5th. How the Other Half Loves. Alan Ackburn's comedy of marital misunderstandings, starring Nancy Ebert, Mark Gash, Paul Klogman, Jenny Mitchell, Tierney Ness, and Seaman Roberts. Partial proceeds will be donated to the North Vancouver Family Services Christmas Bureau. That's till December 8th at the Presentation House Theatre in North Vancouver. The Rez Sisters. Theatre at UBC presents Thompson Highway's comedy drama about seven Native women who leave the reserve in search of the world's biggest bingo game. That is till November 24th at the Frederick Wood Theatre. Here's an interesting one. Debbie Does Dallas, the musical. Pickled Productions presents a satirical musical version of the 1970s porn flick. That is till November 24th at the Media Club on Cambie. Richard III, William Shakespeare's tragedy about a prince with an unbridled lust for power. That's directed by Scott Bellis and starring Bob Fraser and the students of Studio 58. It's at Studio 58 at Langara till December 9th. There's also A Moon for the Misbegotten. United Players presents Eugene O'Neill's love story set on a farm in 1920s Connecticut. That is at the Jericho Arts Center till December 9th. There's also Some Men. Raving Theater presents the Canadian premiere of Terrence McNally's Exploration of Gay Culture and Relationships. That's till December 2nd at Performance Works. Finally, there's The Ecstasy of Rita Joe. Canadian playwright George Riga's classic drama about an Aboriginal woman who moves to the city and finds herself caught between two cultures. That's till December 8th at the Fire Hall Arts Center on East Cordova, and I'm hoping that I can go check that one out soon and have a review for you all in the coming weeks. In dance, there's Elemental Brubrick. Ballet BC presents the Canadian premiere of choreographer Lara Lubavitch's new work set to music by David Brubrick, plus choreography by Serge Benathan and Simone Orlando. And we're actually going to be having about a five-minute interview with Simone Orlando coming up, which was done by Tracy Fuller. So that should be interesting. Also in dance, there's Dances on the Hill. Students in SFU School for the Contemporary Arts dance program perform new works by faculty members. That is till November 22nd at the SFU Theater. There's also Lost Action. Kid Pivot performs choreography by artist-director Crystal Pite with original music by Owen Belton. In music, there's the Gizeh Quartet. A French ensemble plays quartets by Haydn, Saint-Saëns, and Schumann, and I'm going to be playing something by Schumann at the end of the show today to warm you up if you're going to be checking that out tonight. It's at 8 p.m. at the Vancouver Playhouse at Hamilton and Dunsmuir. Remember Me, a tribute to Luciano Pavarotti, I can say it, a tribute to Luciano Pavarotti. That's tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the Italian Cultural Center. Foothills Brass Quintet. Chris Morrison and Jay McCallick, Coley Morrison and Ben Perium perform at the UBC Recital Hall. That's tomorrow night at noon. There's also the Pacific Spirit Concerts. Pianist Jane Coop and cellist Anthony Lizet perform Beethoven sonatas. That is also the UBC Recital Hall, and it is on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Finally, in music, there's Pictures and Poems, the music of Mussorgsky, Truss, and Mahler. Composer Edgar Howeth conducts his arrangement of Mussorgsky's Pictures at an exhibition, written for brass ensemble and percussion. With guest mezzo-soprano and Nina Cross, the VSO also performs Strauss's Don Juan and works by Mahler. Please excuse me if I pronounced any of those names wrong. That is November 24th and November 26th at 8 p.m., and it's showing at the Orpheum Theater. Now, right now, we're going to go to a little bit of music. This is something that I came across that I just thought was sort of interesting. It's a jazz track from a CD called 50 Years of Jazz and Blues. It's by a singer named Frances Griffin, and it's called Two Little Worlds. So, or Two Little Words, I should say. So here it is. Once again, you're listening to CITR 101.9.
Yes, I'll thrill you, baby. I can really say.
Okay, so once again, that was a track called Two Little Words by a singer named Francine Griffin. Now, up next, we have a review of the Georgia O'Keeffe exhibit currently showing at the Vancouver Art Gallery, and that's by arts volunteer and UBC journalism student Tracy Fuller. So here's that review for you all.
Georgia, the whole day through.
The Vancouver Art Gallery's exhibition of Georgia O'Keeffe's work offers a dynamic cross-section of the 20th century artist's oeuvre. Spanning her 60-year career, the works begin as focused experiments with color and shading, but later lead to abstract experiments with depth, perception, and contrast. The first paintings are not very engaging and look something like the posters one might expect to see on a preteen girl's walls, when stuffed teddy bears still retain real estate atop pink pony bedsheets. But just when you begin to worry that it will all be flowers and curlicues, O'Keeffe's pastel colors saturate, and she begins to experiment with starker, more engaging subjects. She transforms nature into abstraction through magnification and by breaking her subjects down and distinguishing them through form, color, and contour. According to the Vag, O'Keeffe was renowned for steadfastly remaining true to her own unique vision amid shifting artistic trends of the time, which basically means that O'Keeffe's work didn't change much over her 60-year career. Those of you who have seen O'Keeffe's work before and didn't like it are best to steer clear of this exhibition, because even if it is the first Canadian solo exhibition of O'Keeffe's work in over 50 years, you're not likely to find too many surprises here. There are, however, a few very striking pieces that prompt the viewer to stop and look again and really think about what's being represented on the canvas. Winter Pass Through Snow was one such piece for me. Some of the most interesting elements of this exhibition were actually the photos by Alfred Stieglitz, who was O'Keeffe's husband, and the later photos by Todd Webb. As one of O'Keeffe's scholars put it, through Alfred's eyes, we see Georgia as a beautiful, unembodied being. Through Todd's eyes, we see her as a person. The photographs are fascinating and add crisp contrast to the landscapes and abstractions that arise in O'Keeffe's later oils. Overall, the exhibition seems very vaginal, which seems to be very appropriate considering the venue. The exhibition will run until January 13th, 2008, and student tickets are priced at $10.
Georgia, Georgia.
All right, so that was Tracy's review of the Georgia O'Keeffe exhibit currently showing. I also checked that one out, actually. And just to the comment about it being vaginal or whatever, apparently that was something which Georgia O'Keeffe actually contended her whole life was people's interpretation of her paintings that way. It was something which her husband first said about her paintings, and then it sort of took off and it's become something that's commonly associated with her work. So if you're wondering whether or not that's the case, I guess you got to sort of go check it out for yourself. So right now we have a couple of more listings up for you guys. So we're going to be talking about literary events and galleries. So first up, there's the Transgender Day of Remembrance, an evening of storytelling. Pride UBC and the Positive Space Campaign present an evening of storytelling with members of the transgendered community and their allies. That is tonight at 6 p.m. at the sub-building here at UBC, where we're located here on CITR 101.9. There's also the Disjunct Performance Series, readings by Ryan Fitzpatrick, hey, the same last name as me, Natalie Zena Walshots, with guest Paulo Javier. That is at Spartacus Books tomorrow from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. There's also Writers in the Round, a regular event hosted by Kate Polsky, featuring readings and music followed by an open mic. That is the third Wednesday of each month at 8 p.m., which includes next week, and that's at the Montmartre Cafe, which actually always has great events on. Another thing you want to keep your eyes open for is the Jewish Book Festival, which is coming up this weekend, November 24th to 29th, a six-day event featuring readings, panel discussions, writing, and self-publishing workshops, a spoken word slam, children's authors, an opening night gala, poetry brunch, and new and used book sales. There's also the Writer's Studio, readings of poetry, short fiction, and creative nonfiction by writers from all 7 years of SFU's Writer's Studio. That is at the SFU Harbor Center. It's on November 24th from 7 to 9:30 p.m. In galleries of the Song of Lilith, works by Lillianne Kleiner. That is till December 9th at the Sydney and Gertrude Zack Gallery on West 41st. It's also A Cast of Shadows, Intaglio Prints by Jude Graybell. That is till January 13th at the Burnaby Art Gallery. Mark Lewis, Modern Times, 10 works by the London-based Canadian filmmaker. That is till January 6th at the Vancouver Art Gallery. There's also reflexive drawings, drawings by Julie Mayratu, and that's till December 15th at the SFU Gallery. And finally, in galleries, there is Swagger, images by Angela Grossman, explore the world of young boys. That is till December 1st at the Diane Ferris Gallery. Now, we'll be right back to tell you guys a little bit about the European Union Film Festival, which is coming up this week. But first of all, these messages from CITR 101.
Ever wonder what happened to all those Broadway musical characters that ended up alone?
Yes, tell me.
They came together in a brand new performance. In this show, written and directed by Megan Crosby, characters including Amos Hart from Chicago and the Phantom from Phantom of the Opera join in unexpected ways.
I heard there's going to be amazing singing, acting, and dancing for a show you won't want to miss.
The show is called That's Another Story, and it's playing Friday, November 23rd and Saturday, November 24th at the Scarf Building at UBC. For more information or to purchase tickets, please email gs_tickets@yahoo.ca or visit the website at www.gsubc.ca.
It's going to be the world premiere of the original cast.
Hey, Quentin and Dave from Chips with Everything.
Hey, Heather from Queer FM, what's up?
Well, you know how Bryce, our program director here at CITR, has kind of been riding all of our asses about making promos for our shows?
Cha! Yes!
Well, you know, I was thinking, like, over at the CBC, they have this woman named Promo Girl, and she comes on once an hour and tells everybody what's coming up, and it's usually kind of theatrical, and she has, like, a really sexy voice and stuff. So anyway, I was thinking that I'd really like to have a promo boy, or like promo boys. Would you guys be up for that?
Sure. What do we have to do?
Just tell people about Queer FM, really.
Okay.
Queer FM features news, views, current affairs, arts and music. For, of course, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities and all its allies. Heather Kitchen hosts Queer FM Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. on CITR 101.9.
All right, so you're back again listening to Arts Express with me, your host, Katie Fitzpatrick. And now we're going to talk to you guys a little bit about the European Union Film Festival, which is coming up at the Pacific Cinematheque Theater. It's a festival which features 25 films from 25 countries over 13 nights. And it starts technically on November 22nd, though that's by invitation. So for the normal folk out there, which includes myself, it starts on November 23rd. And some of the films that are coming up this week, if you want to check some out, include a film from Portugal called Kiss Me, which is about a young woman who escapes her unhappy small-town life by fleeing to a fantasy world in which she is Marilyn Monroe. Another film that's showing is the Slovakian film Two Syllables Behind, which I'm going to be reviewing in just a second. Those are both on Friday night. Also on Saturday, there's the Slovenian film Tuning. An out-of-tune piano is the metaphor for a marriage suffering a crisis of complacency in Slovene director Igor Sterk's fine Bergen-esque drama, which has won two kudos for its strong script, solid performances, and accomplished visual design. If you want to find out what else is coming up at the European Union Film Festival, you can go to the website at www.cinematheque.bc.ca. That's the Pacific Cinematheque website, so you can also find out what's showing at Pacific Cinematheque all year round, which is usually some really interesting new releases, as well as often they restore older films that are classic favorites over at Pacific Cinematheque. So as I mentioned, I saw Two Syllables Behind, the Slovakian film that's going to be showing on Friday night during the film festival. I'm just going to tell you guys a little bit about it. So it's described in the pamphlet in the following way. A fresh perspective on contemporary life in Eastern Europe infuses this winning comic drama. Reminiscent of recent films by young Czech directors and a popular success at home in Slovakia, Two Syllables Behind concerns young Zuza, an attractive art history student who lives in Bratislava, dreams of Paris, and like many of her more carefree, more materialistic post-communist generation, is eager to have it all and to have it as fast as she can. So near the beginning of this film, the protagonist Zuza's art history professor is talking about the Art Nouveau, saying that it is about emotion, sweeping, and explosive. And I believe that this same effect is what director Katerina Sulyahova wanted to capture in her film, Two Syllables Behind. The story follows Zuza as she struggles with feeling out of it. She feels lost and detached from her life, moving from one irrelevant, disappointing relationship to another. This is all epitomized by her job, where she dubs over the voices of other actors for Slovakian film releases. She feels as though her life is also dubbed, fake and separated from the reality that should lie somewhere underneath it. Although she has money, beauty, and a fast-paced life, everything the younger generation is supposedly longing for, the viewer cannot help but wonder if it was actually her parents, the drifter and the so-called devil, who are happier in their simple way of life. Although this movie is interesting and full of emotional poignancy, it is also scattered and confusing. It could be compared in some ways to the popular French film from 2000, Amélie, with its strange characters and unexpected turns. Nonetheless, the various threads of this film do not seem to be properly pulled together, leaving the viewer feeling somewhat lost by the end. An interesting commentary on Slovakian life, but not a great film on the whole. And I also just want to take note of the title, Two Syllables Behind. It refers to her when she's two syllables behind in her dubbing through the film, but I'm also wondering if it might have something to do with Czechoslovakia being six syllables and both Slovakia and Czech Republic being four. Just my interpretation, I guess. Maybe you want to look into the history of that to find out if it's true or not. Now, before we go today, we're going to be playing an interview that Tracy Fuller did with the ballet choreographer Simon Orlando. So I'll play that for you all right now, right here on Arts Express.
On Thursday, November 22nd, Ballet BC will present the world premiere of Simon Orlando's new modern ballet piece, Realm of Her Eclipse. Simone grew up in North Van and is one of BC's best-known dancers and choreographers. She was the recipient of the 2006 Clifford E. Lee Choreography Award, and she spoke with me this weekend about her upcoming choreographic debut.
What inspired Realm of Her Eclipse?
Well, the piece has been inspired by the music of Maurice Ravel, his piano trio in A minor, as well as the art of Charles Forsberg, who's a Vancouver-based abstract painter. So it really stemmed from finding a piece of music that I felt that I could work with and that allowed me to explore the ideas that I wanted to.
What does the title mean?
The title, it refers to an eclipse on several different levels. Firstly, when you watch the piece visually, I think what you'll see happening on stage, an abstraction of the idea of an eclipse. So Charles's work, his paintings, are fully revealed and obscured by dancers, by moving travelers. So there's this constant idea of a shifting landscape, something being shadowed or covered and then eventually revealed. So there's that idea of an eclipse on that visual level. And then on more of a personal level or an emotional level, the main female character in the piece, she is experiencing what I would call sort of an emotional eclipse in the sense that she's sort of sifting through things that have happened to her earlier in her life, memories, and looking at a period in her life that was potentially troubled or dark or a period of her life that was in shadow, and exploring these or reliving these events so that she may eventually sort of put them to rest and move on in her life and adapt or adopt a new identity.
Is it autobiographical at all, or is it fiction?
You know, I it's slightly autobiographical. I would think that when dealing with this piece, I was dealing with memories and my own memories, and that's what I know best. And there's a quote that I have been using throughout the process, which is, memory is an abstract painting. It does not present things as they are, but rather as they feel. And that's from Eugenia Collier, a short story called Marigolds, which was actually a coming-of-age story. And the piece is really loosely exploring the idea of a rite of passage and the idea of three stages of rite of passage: the separation, a liminal period, and then incorporation. So the liminal period is, for her, is somewhat that period where she's there. It's a period of an eclipse.
How have the dancers responded to this work?
They were great. It was really exciting.